We discussed last night four Isurim, whether or not they were connected to Zela. First, we brought down Machlokas into the Rambam and the Chinuch. In terms of the Isur of El Kel Yechalo Sitein and Mechamesh Lo Sonif Hal Kamas Vayacha, when a Poel is allowed to eat, someone who works in the field is allowed to eat the food while he's working, but he's not allowed to take it home or to harvest for himself with the kli. So, is that klal gezel or is that just a separate issur? So that seems to be machlokes, because the Chinuch says, well, whenever you violate this lav, you also violate the lav of gezel, because if you take something that you don't have permission to take, that's gezel. And then he just, you know, he gets into the philosophy. If so, so if it's gezel anyway, why do you need a separate law for it? And he explains that no, this is just part of Hashem's like reminding us. It's a favor Hashem does for us to remind us not to do things that we might have had a havmina to cut corners with. That's the and that's how he reads the famous mamer of Chananya ben Akavya. The Mechusin points out the Rama, however, says that if you do, let's say, take home grapes in your pockets or etc., then you violate the lav of El Kelei Chalo Sitein, and doesn't mention the lav of Gzela. So there seems to be a machlokas rishonim here, whether this is Gezel or not, what's the basis of the machlokas. The Mechus Chino points out this part of more general machlokas, whenever you're like, have permission to do something, and then that permission is restricted, does that mean that you basically have permission, just you're not allowed to utilize that permission, or does that mean the permission doesn't exist in the first place? This is called the concept of Ahadre L'Isur Kamet. Let's go back to its original Isur. So Achlokas seems to be, what's the lundus of El Kel Yechalo Zitein? The Chinuch says, really, you have no right to eat someone else's grapes. The Torah gives you the right to eat them. But when the Torah says you can't put them, you can't take them home in your pockets, what that's bringing it back to being someone else's grapes. So it's Gezel, you're taking someone else's grapes. It's just redundant Isur Gezel for Musar purposes. The Rambam understands that, no, really you have permission to take grapes while you're working there. That's a general permission. It's mufka from gezel. You're allowed to take grapes. However, even though it's not gezel, you have the right to take grapes, the Torah says, okay, it's usur to use that right to put them in your pockets. It's only mutter to use that right to eat them on the spot. But it's not gezel, because you do have a basic right. You're just not allowed to use the right in a certain way. The Minchas Chinuch there compares this to many similar cases in Shas, question of Hadri L'Isur Kama, in the realm of Isurim, you know, the whole question of, right, so Psulim HaKadoshim, bed, carbon with a mum, right, so I'm allowed to eat it, but I'm not allowed to milk it, so that go back to being Be'ila, or does that mean I'm really allowed to, I'm just not allowed to utilize it for milking. V'chuli v'chuli, I'm allowed to cook for Ochel Nefesh on Yantif, but not for Goyim, etc., etc. The Rav Lichtenstein just pointed out that this seems to be also perhaps the root of Machlokas or Mir and Chachamim, that the Gemara never explains what the root of the Machlokas is. In Bav Metzia Daf Ayin Ches, there's Machlokas in Mir and Chachamim, if I rent a donkey from you, I'll manas to take it on the mountains, or I take it in the valley, or I say I'll take it in the valley, take it on the mountains. Right? Basically, a rental contract says I'll use it for one purpose and I'll use it for another purpose. So obviously, if it dies because I use it the wrong purpose, then I'm chayiv. Right? If I take it in the mountain and it dies because there's not thick enough air on the mountaintop, then obviously I'm chayiv. So the question is, what if it dies coincidentally? Right? I say the mountain, and instead I take it in the valley, and it gets struck by lightning. You know, it doesn't make a difference. It's not my fault. So the Chachamim say, I'm potter. And Reb Meir says, I'm chayiv because I'm a gazlan. And the gazlan is chayiv in all onsim, because kol mishanim das v'alabayis, nikra gazlan. So that's machlokes. Reb Meir says, I'm a gazlan for using it on the wrong highway. Now Chum say, I'm not a gazlan. I'm a poshei if that causes a mishap. So what's the issue of this machlokas? Reb Lichtenstein is just machadish as a ha'ara that it could be this is the same machlokas. Basically, I'm a socher, I have the right to use it, but then you restrict my right by saying only on the mountains, not the valleys, or only in the valleys, not the mountains. So Reb Meir says, Hadri L'Isur Kama, really, I have no rights in your animal. You give me schiras, the right to use your animal, Kenyan schiras, But you take away the Kinyan Schiros for using it on the valley, and I'm back to being a goslin. It's as if I just stole your animal. The parallel, not at all the Shutasim, parallel to the Chinuch here, goes back to Allah, to Gzela. While the Chachamim say, no, basically I have a Kinyan Schiros, I have the right to use it anywhere. However, then there's this additional instruction, but I can't utilize that right to bring it in a valley. But nonetheless, I'm still within my rights. It's not Gzela. It's just that I can't utilize my rights in one way, but I'm not a goslin. I'm just going to be responsible if I cause any untoward consequences to my pshi. It's just pshi, it's not gzela. So it's the same machlokas. If you have someone else's property and you're allowed to use it, but then you're not allowed to use it, do you say that it goes back to being gzela, or that no, your fundamental right is there, you just can't utilize that right? That's the first issue we discussed. The second issue we discussed was in terms of Matnas Aniyim. There's a lav by Matnas Aniyim, a few lav, every one of the Matnas Aniyim says a lav. Right, it says los chalav hasa chalav tzor. Ashicha, it says los hashav lekachta. Olos los olelach acharecha. Vechuli vechuli. So all these lavim. So is that gezel or not? Meaning, if I am the farmer and I do take the matnas aniyim, the leket shicha peya or olelos for a karen, am I a gazlin because I'm stealing something that's not mine? Or no, it is mine, I'm just violating the law of denying the Aniyim their rightful due. So he pointed out it's a bit of a stira, because the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Chof, Gimel, and Aleph, uses the phrase Gezel Aniyim, uses the word Gezel, and that's talking about just pulling tricks. Like, let's say talking about a guy who would pull a trick, who would wait for all the Aniyim to go home, and then bring his relatives an Aniyim and say, okay, now it's pay, take it quick. They call it Gezel Aniyim. Right, but that might be a little bit of an exaggeration to call it Gezel. But obviously, if they can call it Gezel, it means that it's really the money of the Aniyim. And if I steal it, it's Gezel. It's really Mom and Aniyim. If I steal it, it's Gezel. So that seems to imply that it is Gezel, because it is their money. In Chulin Daf Kof Lamed Amud Bet, also it says, like, if I'm Mazik Matnos Aniyim, I'm Potter, which seems to indicate that it's also to be Mazik that money. Why would it be usher to mazik that money? Seems to be, because if it belongs to someone else, usher me mazik, someone else's money. Technically, they can't sue me for it, because who's going to sue me? So that seems to be, from Shabbos Daf Chaf Gimel and Kulin Daf Kuf Lamed, Amud Bet, that it really becomes their money, and if I take it, I'm now a gazlan. However, the Gemara in Daf Kuf Lamed, Dalet Amud Bet, of Vesechus Chulin, has an interesting drasha. It's a case that happened once, that I left the Matnas Aniyim, and there are no Aniyim. There are no poor people in my town, Baruch Hashem. So what do? So they have a drasha. Well, you're supposed to leave it for poor people, not for the bats and the ravens. Meaning, it's not supposed to go to waste. So if there are poor people, leave it for the poor people. If not, I can keep it. That's a very strange halacha. What do you mean? If not, I can keep it. Since why can I take someone else's money just because he's not here to take it? So that drasha seems to imply, and it's fine. There's a ptur from the mitzvah of giving it to them if they're not around. What right do I have to take someone else's money? So it sounds like it's really my money. It's just a mitzvah to give to them if I can. And if I'm part of the mitzvah of giving to them, I can keep it. So it seems to be a stira. So, and certainly from the way the Rambam quotes it, the Rambam makes it sound like, you know, really outstanding moment is if this would be someone else's money, this would be called Yeir Shalom Das, and I wouldn't be allowed to take it. But since it's really my money, I only have to leave it if there are any. If there are no any, I can keep it. So it implies that it's just a mitzvah, but it's not actually their money. If I take it, it's not gzeila. It's just a bittul of a mitzvah. And here I can't do the mitzvah anyway. So one second. So he resolved in the end, he wants to say it's somewhere in between, that, you know, these two realms of mammon and mitzvah are not always completely distinct. Sometimes, we'll bring this up again, the mitzvah can affect the dini mammonos. So what he wants to say is, when there's a mitzvah of matnas aniyim, it becomes their money, and if I take it, it's gezel. But when there's no mitzvah of matnas aniyim, it doesn't become their money. So it starts out as a mitzvah and ends up as dini mamonos, and that resolves the steer. When there's a mitzvah, it's gezel, it's their money. When there's no mitzvah, then it's not their money. Andrew? Okay. The next thing we discussed was ribbis and ona'ah. So the Gemara discusses in Bavim Tzedav Samach Aleph the possibility that you could have learned Gezel from Ribbis and Ona'ah. And they really think that you could have. But Pashas of the Sugi, he said, is in the end, we could have learned Gezel from Ribbis and Ona'ah, But it seems that based on the basic halachic definitions of ribis and onah, we don't. Meaning, is every thief over on the isser of ribis and the isser of onah, l'chor not? L'chor halachically, we say, maybe we could have deduced the idea of not stealing from the isser of ribis and onah, but halachically, someone who steals is not violating ribis and onah. Halachically, only someone who lends money violates ribis, only someone who does transactions in the marketplace violates onah. A stam thief doesn't violate ribis and onah. The more interesting question is, does someone who takes ribis or ma'anes, his customer, violate gezel, which is what we've been asking about all these averus. So is every ribis a case of gezel, and is every ona'a a case of gezel? So in ribis, we asked in terms of from two angles. I guess you call it chachila and b'di'evet. Number one is, the iser and the result is someone who takes ribis violate the law of gezel or not? So that seemed to be if someone takes ribis violate the law of gezel or not? So that sounded like it was a machlokas between the Ramban and the Megillas Esther. The Ramban said that in his, mitzvah say that he claims the Rambam left out. The Ramban says that there's a mitzvah say to return ribis. If you take ribis, the mitzvah say to return it. Likely the mitzvah say to return gezel, the mitzvah say to return ribis, but gezel is gezel, ribis is ribis. So Ramban seems to assume ribis is not gezel. Ribis has its own mitzvah say to return it. The Megillas Esther, in defending the Rambam, now, you could have defended the Rambam in different ways. You don't have to say that's the Megillas Esther, but I can think of lots of ways to defend the Rambam. But the Megillas Esther, in defending the Rambam, said that that why didn't the Rambam count the mitzvah say of returning ribis? Because it's bechlal, the mitzvah say returning gezel. It's to say, ribis is gezel. So you don't need to count the separate mitzvah say returning. So it sounds like there's a machlokas that that the Ramban thinks ribis is not gezel, but the Megillas Esther thinks that ribis, Megillas Esther thinks that ribis is gezel. One second, yeah. So the Megillas Esther thinks that ribis is gezel. Now the question is, based on what we learned about the law of gezel, should you consider ribis to be gezel or not? So we saw machlokas between Tosos and the Chiddush Aran as to when the Isser of Gezel was Shaykh, right, by the Sugya of Psula Eibus and in Masach B'Kubya. The Chiddush Aran says, the Chiddush Aran says that Masach B'Kubya is not Gezel because he gave it to you willingly, you didn't take it forcibly. So according to the Giran, if Yisach B'Kubya is not Gezel because he gave it willingly, then Ribis is not Gezel because he gave it willingly. So according to the Giran, it should turn out, like the Ramban, that Ribis is not Gezel. But according to the Tosfos, Tosfos says Yisach B'Kubya is Gezel. The only reason he's not Pasul D'Oraisa is because it's Gezel B'Shogi, because he doesn't think it's so bad. But according to Tosfos, Yisach B'Kubya is Gezel because you have no right to the money, because even though we took it willingly, so what would be the din of ribis? So here's the Masach B'Kubya is not gezel, then for sure ribis is not gezel. If you go like Tosfos, says Masach, and this would seem to end up like the Shita the Ramban, that Masach B'Kubya is Gezel, even if you take something very nicely and the guy hands it over quite politely, that's still called Gezel, because anytime you take money that you're not supposed to, that's Gezel. So you would think at first glance that Ribis should also be Bechlal Gzela, which would end you up like the Megillas Esther. The only problem is that seems to be in Mefurish Mishnah, the end of his Yoneshech, Vav and Tzidav Ayin Hamad Beis, that Ribbis is not Gzeila. It's a little funny. I'm not sure what the Megillus Esther would do with that. It's a Mefurish Mishnah that you haven't violated the law of Gezel, then why should you think that the Bechlal Mishnah is Gzeila? Because the Mishnah says, list all the lafim. Right, over Mishum Lo Sita, Mishum Al Tikach, Mishum Al Siya, Lokanosh, Mishum Lo Sima, Lo Neshach, Mishum Lo Kna Iver, Lo Sita, Mechshol. All the Lavim you violate, but it doesn't say the Lavim Zela. So it seems to be from the Mishnah that Ribbis is not Zela. So what do we want to say? We want to say that Tosfot also agree with the Ramban, that Ribbis is not Zela. Like the Ramban. So why is Ribbis not Gzela if Mesach B'Kubya is Gzela? What makes Mesach B'Kubya more of a Gezel than Ribbis? So he had two ways of differentiating, one of which I think was really ended up being a lot clearer than the other. One way is that in Ribbis, he's giving it to you more knowingly, but in Mesach B'Kubya, you're tricking him. In Mesach B'Kubya, even though he handed over willingly, you're tricking him because he thinks that he has to pay, and really halachically he doesn't. In Mesach B'Kubya, you're tricking him out of his money because he doesn't know the halacha. But in Ribbis, everyone knows the halacha of the Yisr Ribbis. He's just not so firm. That's why he's paying you Ribbis. But so in Mesach B'Kubya, we trick him out of the money, that's Gzela. In Ribbis, where he knows that it's awesome, but he gives it anyway, and there's no trickery involved, you know, where it's really Baratzo, right? So one way you could say is basically Mesach B'Kubya is not really the Ratzon because he just doesn't know the halacha. But Ribbis is really the Ratzon because he really wants to give it to you because he made a cheshbon that it's worth giving Ribbis and he knows that it's Aser, but he decides he wants to do it anyway. So he's really handing it over willingly. But the other shot, which probably makes more sense, is to say that Mesachet B'Kubya, you have no right to the money. It's eino kone, right? Masmachta lo kanya. You have no dinimonis right to the money. But Ribbis, say very simple, that masmachta lo kanya, but Ribbis is kone. You do have a logical right to the money. Meaning if not for the isser of Ribbis, you would deserve to be kone the money. Right, asmachta, I mean, think about it, right? Asmachta is in Rosh Mishpat, Ribbis is in Yoredeh. Asmachta means you have no valid kinyan of the money because there's no gemir stas. So that's why it's Gzela. But Ribbis, you do have a valid right to the money. What do you mean? You have the right to charge for using the money. Right? If I rent you my car, I can charge you a fee every day. So if I lend you money, I can also charge you a fee every day. It's just a chiddush of the Torah. It's not a chiddush of the Torah that's machta lo kanya. Obviously, it's machta lo kanya. That's just the rules of logical kinyan. But it's a chiddush of the Torah not to take Ribbis, because really, Ribbis is kone. Really, you do deserve to pay me rent for using my money. Really, that is the proper way that business should take place. Now, if the Ramban of the Torah goes so far as to say, it's just a chesed to not charge Ribbis. But of course, logically, you should owe the Ribbis, just where it's chesed to not charge Ribbis. So therefore, it makes sense why Ribbis might not end up being Zela, why you would say, in the end, you don't violate the law of Zela for Ribbis, which is really what we want to say, like the Ramban, based on the mission, Daf Ayin Hey, either because you can never violate the law of Ribbis without actually mugging someone, or because you can violate the law of Ribbis by just taking something you have no right to. But here, you do have a right to it, just the Torah wants you to be an extra nice guy. That's what the Ramban on the Torah says. So he's trying to explain, responding polemically, right? All the Goyim say, how can we charge Ribbis to Goyim, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You know, why are the Jews such bad people, they're Shylocks? So the Ramban says, well, how do we should charge Ribbis? We have every right to Ribbis. That's called rent. It's very fair. Just that for other Jews, we go lift the Mishra Sadin, and we're Balei Chesed. But why do we have to be Balei Chesed for people who are not that close to us? Okay, the other way you could ask this question is, the other way you could ask this question is, not do you violate the, this is in terms of the law of Gzela. How about the end result of the money? Who does the money belong to after I collect my ribbis? I collect ribbis from you, whose money is it? Is it the malva's money, or is it still the lova's money? So not in terms of you violate the law of Gzela, but whether the money is a cheftish al gzeila or not. So there seem to be a few rayas, right? There are four rayas that he mentioned in terms of, you know,
whose money is it after I collect the ribbis? Is it the malva's money? Is it the malva's money that really he collected it? It's his money. He just has a mitzvah say to give it back. Or is it the lova's money?
Or is it the lova's money and he has to give it back because it doesn't belong to him? So seems to be some pretty strong rayas that in Dinim Mamonos, the malva was kona the money. Just a mitzvah say from the bring it back. One is
Livrei lo az harachmana. That the Gemara says he has to return the money. Right? This is the Ptur Yorsh. The Malva has to return the ribbis to the Lova. But if the Malva dies, his kids don't have to return the ribbis. Why?
So the Gemara says, look, the kids inherit it, and they don't have a mitzvah say to return it. Now, of course, this only makes sense. What do you mean the kids inherit it, but they don't have a mitzvah say to return it? It only makes sense if it's the Malva's money. He has a mitzvah say to return it, so he can bequeath it to his, he can yarshin it to his kids. Then his kids don't return it, but it was never his money in the first place. Then how could his kids ever inherit it? Then, you know, it's not his money. They have no right to inherit in the first place. Seems to be a pretty good raya. The other raya is from Rava. PR. The case of a glima, if I have a contract, you owe me, you know, $10 ribbis. And instead of the ribbis, you give me a shirt. So the question, what do I have to give back? Do I have to give back the shirt? Or can I keep the shirt and give you $10? So Rava says, I have to give you back. Rabbi says, I can keep the shirt. Just give you $10. Rava says, no, I have to give you back the shirt so people won't look at me and say, ah, that shirt, that's a shirt of ribbis. For PR reasons, right? It's not proper that I should walk around and people say, oh, look, he's walking around in a shirt of ribbis. But it seems like, on the Doraisa level, right? In Doraisa, we don't care what people are going to say when I walk around with my shirt. On the Doraisa level, I don't have to return the glima, right? Midoraisa. I don't have to return the shirt. Meaning that midoraisa, if I collect a shirt as ribbis, I just have to give you back that amount of value. I don't have to give you back the shirt. Now, what's shot? If I have no bailus on the shirt in the first place, then of course I have to give you back. How can I keep the shirt? Midoraisa, I can keep the shirt and give you money instead. Why? If I have no bailus on it, how can I take your thing and give you money instead? It must be that I do have bailus on it. It's just a mitzvah say to give you back. So in which case, if I really do have bailus, just a mitzvah say to give back, then I can go fill the mitzvah say as long as I give you back the value. I don't have to give you back the actual object. And as the mitzvah say, I just have to give you back what we agreed on for the ribbis. Not necessarily the object, but if, because the object belongs to me. But if you would say, no, the object really belongs to the lova, the object still belongs to you and I have no right to it at all, then if I have your shirt, of course I have to give you back your shirt. I can't give you back money instead. But if I have my shirt with the mitzvah say to pay you, then I can pay you money instead. Also seems to be foolish in the Rishonim, the Ritva and the Rashva. Right, in terms of the question of, what about Mekadesh Isha? What if, before Yesh, right, I took ribbis from you, and I gave that money to a woman for Kiddushin? So, if you would say that the money still belongs to you, to the Lova, and I have no rights to it, then the answer should be Ina Mekadeshes. Just like if I steal a ring and give it to a girl, it's not valid Kiddushin, it's not my ring. So, if ribbis is not mine, then if I take a ring for ribbis and give it to a girl, it shouldn't work. But the Ritva says, this is the third raya. The Ritva says mekudeshes, and the Ritva says straight out. He says all the lumdas. You don't need any briskers. Chuli. The Ritva says if I take a ring for ribbis and give it to her, take $100 bill for ribbis and give it to a girl, that's a valid kiddushin because really it does belong to me. There's just a mitzvah safe for me to return it. Right? How do I know? Because if the guy dies, his kids don't have to return it, which shows he really has full bailus on the ribbis. Just a mitzvah say to return it. So therefore, if I have full bailus on the ribbis, just a mitzvah say to return it. So if I give it to the girl, she gets full bailus. It's a full ma'aseh kedushin. In fact,
I would thus say something I have to worry about having to be Mekayim. You know, I'm giving back a different $100. But it's a valid Kiddushin. And likewise, in terms of the question of what it means when we say Ribis Ktsutsa, Yotze B'dayanim. What does it mean, Yotze B'dayanim? Meaning if I collect Ribis from you, the Bezdin forces me to pay it back. So what does it mean, Bezdin forces me to pay it back? So there are two ways to understand what it means that Bezdin forces me to pay it back. One way to understand is that, what would you say, if I really didn't have Bailos on Ribis, it still belongs to the Loveth, then why would Bezdin force me to pay it back? Because it's not my money. Of course, they take it away and they give it back to me. That's called Yordin Lenchasa. They would go down to my property, take the $100, and give it back to you. So anytime I have someone else's money, Bezdin just confiscates it and gives it to the other guy. It's called Yordin Lenchasa. But if you say it's really my money, it's just a mitzvah say for me to give it back, then what would be the din? So it could still be Yordan Chasaf, but maybe you'd have another option. Maybe you could say, ain't Yordan Len Chasaf? No, they don't confiscate and give it back to him. After all, it's my money. I earned this ribis. It's my money. I only have to give it back to him because of a mitzvah say. So it's not Yordan Chasaf. They can't confiscate my money. Rather, there's a din called Kofin Al Mitzvah Sasei. There's a din that anytime I don't want to do Mitzvah Sasei, Bezdin forces me, they apply physical pressure until I agree. Right? If I say I don't want to put on tefillin anymore, I've had it with tefillin, then Bezdin beats me up until I agree. If I say I'm not picking up a Lulav and Esrog this year, then Bezdin beats me up until I agree. So if I say I'm not giving you back the ribbis, then Bezdin will beat me up until I agree. But they won't take the money, because it's my money. They'll just beat me up until I agree to be Mekayim the Mitzvah Sasei. And that's exactly what the Rashba says. The Rashba says, no way. The Rashba says, Yotz V'dayanim doesn't mean Bezdin take the money away and give it back to the Lova. No, it's my money fair and square. They just beat me up until I agree to do the mitzvah say of returning it. So it seems to be both from two Gemaras and from the Ritva and the Rashba, pretty clear proof that really, in Ribis, when I collect the money, it's my money. The only reason I have to give it back is because of mitzvah say, but it's really my money. The Rav thought otherwise. The Rav really thought that when I collect ribbis, it's not my money. The reason I have to give it back is because it belongs to you. It's not my money. I have to give it back because it belongs to you, and the Malva has no rights over the money. How did he deal with all these riyas? So the Rav says, oh, how could it be? I mean, it's such a good riot the Ritva brings. The Malv has to give the money back, but if he dies, his Yorshim don't have to give the money back. That proves it's really 100% his money. That's why he can bequeath it to his, he can pass it on to his kids. So the Rav said, no, like the story we said before, that it must be that it's only not his money because of the mitzvah. As in the end, he takes sort of an in-between approach. You can't take a pure approach that it's not the
Malva's money, just because the Malva's no rights to it. Because then why do the Malva's kids get to keep it?
So it says they'll take a hybrid approach because of the mitzvah Hashava, Yoredeya affects Choshen Mishpat, and because of the mitzvah Hashava, therefore, it becomes not his money. The truth is, I mean, that's, you know, maybe for all you us from Sanhedrin of Hanabes, from Meruba type studies also sometimes, the fact is a mitzvah can change his money. So for the Malveh, who is a mitzvah of Hashavah, it's not his money. Once the Malveh dies and the mitzvah of Hashavah disappears, then it becomes the Yorshim's money. So that's what the Rav says. You're right, on a permanent basis, once this mitzvah of Hashavah disappears, then it'll become the Malveh's money. But at the very least, while there's a mitzvah shava, that keeps up the lova's money and takes away any mumnus rights of the malva to this money.
So how do you explain I can use it for kiddushin?
So now he didn't necessarily follow through for the Rav.
He said the Rav was told, that was Rav's question, how we use the Kiddushin, but if it's a mitzvah, it'd be bad.
Right, so, 1 second. So, in terms of how he explained Rav, he didn't totally, or listening didn't go into, like, how the Rav would explain Rav, right? If the mitzvah shava means that it's not my money, then why do I have the right to keep the shirt and give you back $10 instead? Unless you say, no, there's some different reason, because really, since you agreed to sell, no, the rib is $10 and you agreed to give me your shirt instead, you agreed to sell me your shirt, and maybe that's a separate binding transaction. What would you do with the ritva? He would obviously disagree with the ritva, right? For sure, he would disagree with the ritva and disagree with the rashba. He would have to disagree with the rashba and say, yordan l'chasav, which is not so crazy, I'm planning we shouldn't do this. He'd have to disagree with the ritual. Also, I'm not sure if he would say taka the woman's not mekudeshes, or maybe you could say the woman's mekudeshes anyway, because then you might get into other questions, such as, is it really true that you can't be mekadesh a woman with something that doesn't belong to you? That's mishnah the old one, beginning perkei v'mesikshus. Not so pasha. Maybe sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. So either he would say the woman's not mekudeshes, or maybe you could say the woman is mekudeshes, even though it's not my money, because. Certainly possible that the woman can be kadesh, even if you say that in the end, since the woman doesn't have a chiv hashava, she can keep the money, and that's the case where I don't give, but she does get, which is the chakir, the mishnah melech there. So, he didn't tell us how the Rav would have gone through it, but clearly the Rav has the ritva and raspa against him. But how he would explain the basic facts, there are ways to answer it. Okay, the last thing. So what we've basically seen, the basic question we asked is Ribbis in the realm of Gezel? Or is it a totally different question, right? Is Ribbis Choshen Mishpat? Or is Ribbis Yerodea? Again, we put Ribbis Yerodea. At least according to the Torah. But is Ribbis Choshen Mishpat, or is it Yerodea? And we asked in terms of the Lav, is it a Lav of Zela? Well, first we asked, is it a Lav of Zela or not? And we decided that we're noted towards the tzad that it's not a lav of zela. But why is it not a lav of zela? Maybe according to the Tosfos, it's not violent. Or according to Tosfos, maybe because it's fully willing. Or maybe because I have full mamonis rights and it's a pure yoredei halacha. And then we ask, the sort of two nafkaminas of this. Number one, is it a lav of zela? Number two, who does the money belong to in the end? So we had a lot of various postulates that the money really belonged to the malv in the end. He just had a yoredei obligation to return it. But the Rav didn't like that. He admitted that it wasn't like pure Choshen Mishpat. The Rav thought, no, once you do your day obligation to return it, Choshen Mishpat, it becomes not my money also, and he took a more hybrid approach. The last thing that Lichtenstein suggested is that really there may be three ways to understand the Issur Ribbis. One way to understand the Issur Ribbis is Choshen Mishpat Zela typed in. Right, along the lines of Megillas Esther. Choshen Mishpat type of Gzela Din. The second way to understand Ribbis is that no, it's a Yerodea Din to not take the money in this particular case. There's a third way the Rav suggested to understand as well, which was inspired by Onah, but I'll just finish up the Ribbis, the Ribbis aspect here. The third way of listening suggested understanding Ribbis was that it's not about the money at all, it's really about the personal interaction and the fact that you are pressuring and paining your friend by taking ribbis from him. So that was a third way you had to understand it, that it was very inspired by Onah, which we'll come back to in a moment, that the Issur ribbis was not about the money, neither in Choshen Mishpat nor in Yerodea, but was about my friend's feelings. He pointed out that in the Psukim, the psukim sound different ways. At least you take Shuvah Shal Mikra. The psukim in Behar are taught, just say, don't take the money. I'll take it only into a Nesha Fasarbis. Deal with the money. The psukim in Kiparski Seitze, Lo Sashik Lachicha, don't bite him, might sound more like has to do with how I treat him as a human being. That's not a way to treat someone, to bite them, as it were. Meaning to gouge out this pound of flesh by taking advantage of them in a time of weakness when they're desperate for money. And it's not just about the money they lose, but it's about how I'm treating them. Rav Lichtenstein said he would have thought that maybe
maybe there are two different aspects, that there's one aspect of Nisr of taking money and another aspect of Nisr of how you treat someone, and then it would be very Meduyik, because in Parshas Bahar it's talking about poor people. So in poor people, you shouldn't take money of poor people. In Parshas Kiseitse, it's not necessarily talking about poor people, it's talking about anyone. Anyone, you shouldn't treat them personally in an inhumane way. So in Parshas Kiseitse, it's talking about whether poor or rich, you just shouldn't bite people, meaning you shouldn't treat them in such an offensive way. In Parshas Bahar, it's talking about poor people, so saying only poor people, you shouldn't take their money. Like for rich people, the only reason ribbis is also is one reason, because of the way you're treating the person as a human being. For poor people, it's also both because of the way you're treating them as a human being, and Parshas Bahar, because you're taking their money, and they need their money, so they're poor. That's what he would have said. The Gemara in the beginning is a Neshef, does not seem to think there are two different Isser involved, seems to think there's one Isser involved, but that certainly, at least, he might have said, Parshas Kiseitse sounds like the Isser of how you're treating him as a human being, Parshas Bahar sounds like the Isser of taking his money, and it makes sense, because for a poor person, the Isser of taking money makes sense more for a poor person. The rich person has money to spare. The Isser of how you treat someone has nothing to do with their financial status, which one can say, it doesn't tell you anything about the low of his financial status.
Didn't Berlin say something like that it's considered biting them because usually a loan is in a situation where you're impoverished? And wasn't that part of the assumption, so? It seems less of a bite when the person can spare the money.
Correct, but nonetheless, you're still... Meaning, even if the person can afford the money, but if you're taking advantage of him being in a situation right now where he's desperate for cash, that's still taking advantage of someone and causing them pain in their time of need, even if they're rich, right? Even a rich guy, if right now he's short on cash and you charge him a lot of money, then that's still not a nice way of relating to someone. I think that's what he was trying to say. As opposed to nowadays, where being rich people, being poor people, most people borrow money not because they're desperate for cash, just because they have a good business deal, available to them, etc. Okay, in terms of Omna'a, we really had this very, very similar, very similar question about Omna'a. What's the nature of the love of Omna'a? So here's the question: is Onah Gzela, or is Onah a separate Isser of Onah? There is a din of Hazaras Onah as well, right? If I overcharge you more than a sixth, the whole Mekach is Bata, less than a sixth, I don't, but exactly a sixth, which may actually mean a range, if you were the first pair, fourth pair of Bav Metzia, because it's not clear what a sixth means, then I have to refund you the amount I overcharge you. So why do I have to refund you? It's funny, the Gemara never says why I have to refund you. So the Gemara never says why I have to refund you, but from the Rambam, you could have to be medayik that why do I have to refund you the Nah? Because of the Chayachich Mach. Why do we medayik that? Because the Rambam is a funny line where he says someone who corners the market and raises the prices is like someone who's malver beribis. In Hilchos Mechira, Perek Yudalid, Halacha Vav. So he says someone who corners the market and rips people off is like someone who lends beribis. Now, what does that mean? Is that Musr or whatever? So the Sma in Siman Reish Lamed Aleph Sif Katan Yud Gimel says what the Rambam means is it's a violation of a Chayachich Yimach. He's not giving Musr. He's telling halachically, you're in the same boat because you violated the Chayachich Yimach, which seems to imply that in both cases, the problem is you have to give back the money because of a Chayachich Yimach. So it could be that from the Rambam, you can be medayik by this comparison to Ribbis, that the reason you have to be Maser or Nah is Chayachich Yimach. The Pnei Yoshua, however, in Bava Metzia Daf Nun Vav Amud Aleph, which is on the Makor sheet, says he's trying to figure out why you have to master Unah. He says it must be that it's Hashavah's Gzela, because if you're not allowed to take it, then it's Gzela. So the Pnei Yoshua sees it as Gzela. I'm not allowed to take this money. It's Gzela, Hashavah's Gzela. While the Smaz, but seems to be dying from the Rambam, that it's not Gzela. It's a separate Isser of Unah, is a separate Inyan, and the reason I return is because of a separate Pasuk of Achei, Achicha, Imach. The Sma is, the Megillah says we're talking about Ribbis, and the Sma is talking about Onah, so you could say... correct. The Sma is against the Megillah Sester, which is fine. Yeah, fine with me. And if you'll then ask, so why did the Rambam count this? The answer is, Mechlam Mitzvah Tzedakah. So we have then two ways of understanding onah, just like Rivas. Either it's gzela, or it's an issue of taking money, not because of gzela. But the third way, and the mucker of this third way is really from onah, which really with Ramban, could be that onah is not about taking money al gzela, but it's not about taking money. It's just a separate issue of taking money. Onah is really about oppressing someone and causing them pain. Why would we say that? Because we know there's a lot of onas devarim. Now, onas devarim is onas devarim. What does that have to do with onas mamon? So we would have said onas mamon is one iser, onas devarim is a different iser. But the Rambam says otherwise in Perek Yud Dalet of Hilchos Mechira, Halacha Tesvav to Yud Zayin, the Rambam says for a regular Jew, if I rip you off in money, that's a lot of onas mamon. If I insult you and humiliate you, that's a lot of onas devarim. But for a ger, says, even if I rip off the ger in a business transaction, I violate onas mamon and onas devarim and onas ager. And even if I just insult him, I violate onas devarim and onas mamon. That doesn't make any sense. Just I insulted a ger, how could I violate onas mamon? Just because I overcharge a ger, how could I violate onas devarim? So the Rambam says, I know it doesn't make sense to you, but look, the Torah just said onah. The Torah never said onas mamon and onas devarim. We interpret onas mamon and onas devarim. The Torah said onah, so it's a general onah, and each lav, the lav of onas mamon, could also apply to onas devarim. The lav of onas devarim can also apply to onas mamon. So it's a mafurish Rambam that onas devarim is not about words, and onas mamon is not about money, because each one can apply to words or to money. They're both about a common denominator called onah. What is that common denominator? The word onah means I oppress someone, I cause them pain. It's about how I treat someone as a human being. So it's a mafurish Rambam that the iser onah. Now again, what for non ger still the mamon lav covers mamon and the dvarim lav covers dvarim. But theoretically, each lav includes both because for a ger we're more machmirim. We say you violate both lavim, which shows that it's not dvarim that are usher, it's not the mamon that's usher. It's relating to a person in a way that you cause them pain and oppress them. So for the Rambam, at least, he understands another third way. It's not about mamon, gzela, non-gzela. It's about how you treat someone. Okay. The last lav we discussed here was losachmod, So losachmod, we have three basic ways of understanding losachmod. One way of understanding losachmod is tosos. Tosos is a very radical sheet of one of his days in Sanhedrin. The Gemara in Bavit Sinaf Hayamid Beis says, Lo sachmon le'inchi below dami mashmaluhu. Says, people think, some silly people think, that the Isser of Lo sachmon is only to steal things without paying. Just basically to steal. That Lo sachmon only answers total theft. So Tosos says, well, isn't that already covered by the six? So, answer the Lamanam Shleilam, yeah. Some silly people think losachmon is the exact same thing as losigzol. It's not just that a chomid is over on gzela. It mamish is the exact same gzela, it's just a synonym for gzela, to make it a double lav. And, well, from Bavit Zi, it sounds like that's just what some silly people think. Tosin, Sanhedrin, Efchav, Ham, and Beis has one day that the people are right. Yeah, it's not the simplest job in the Gemara. But that, it's not just this what people think. It's that the people are right. That you only violate the lav of losachmon if you take something without paying. If you're a goslin. So this is one radical end of the spectrum, saying that really, lo sachmon is not a new lav at all, it's just a repetition to make it twice as bad. In the heavenly ledger books, you get a double X if you steal, because lo sachmon and lo sigzol mean the same thing. Within, however, the more mainstream approach is represented by the Rambam, the Ravid, and all the other Rishonim the other day in Tosfos says no. The more mainstream approach is that the silly people are wrong, that lo sigzol means you can't take something without paying money. Lo sachmod means even if you pay money, it's still also to take something. So then we have to ask, you know, within possibility one is one day in Tosos. Possibilities two and three, within the mainstream approach, that it's talking about taking something and paying money. What's bad about that? But the guy didn't want to sell it. So it's only about pressuring someone to sell something which they don't want to sell. So if it's only pressuring someone to sell something they don't want to, right, like the case of, right, like Achav tried to do to Nabal's Hay Israeli, right, he's willing to pay full price of the field, but he's pressuring the guy to sell something and he refused to sell. That's what Losachmon means. So the question is, how close is that to Gzela? So that seems to be a very famous love, this machlokas between the Rambam and the Ravid, because they have a whole bunch of different machlokas, which all seem to come down to the same point. They both agree. They both agree with the drusha. I think they're quoting from. They both agree with the drusha of Chazal that you only violate losach mode if you take something from someone else. It has to be chimash yishbo maisa, and if you take something from someone else, even if you pay them the money, because you pressured the guy to give it to you. So what's the difference between them? So they have a few machlokos.
Here's the Rambam. Here's the Ravid. The Ravid says only if he doesn't say Rotsani. You only violate Osach mode if you pressure the guy to hand it over and the guy doesn't say Rotsani. But Rotsani would not be Nisa Doraisa. Well, the Rambam, by his silence, seems to say even if he says Rotsani, that's the Losach mode. The second machlokas they have is that the Rambam says you don't get malchus because it's lav she'im bo maisa. And the Ravid says it has a maisa. We just darshined. You, Rambam, you yourself said you're only over an issa d'raisa and a chima she'im bo maisa. I mean, even the words. The Rambam says ein loka lav zek the imbo maisa. And it says, but we darshan that you only violate the law if you take the item. You mean if you unsuccessfully try to take the item, that's not a violation. It's only a violation if you take the item because chimot sheish bo maisa. So the one says yesh bo maisa, how can you call it imbo maisa? The right instead says, the law hanitek latashlumen, that you're pater from malkos, right? He has to find why you're pater from malkos. Says you're pater from malkos because the law needs to latashlumen because you have to give it back. The Rambam doesn't say this. So, it looks like he didn't concentrate as much on the third point. But what's the pshat? So basically, every single point of the Rambam, every single point of the Rambam is one big lishitase. It's actually one of these beautiful places where the lundus is like 100% mochrach and really follows the lishitase throughout. No dechak in this lundus. And he got it from a very beautifully one diakum lush on the Rambam. The Rambam says you don't violate losach mode unless you took the object. Now, would you ever say a thief doesn't violate zeil unless he takes the object? Would you ever say you don't violate the lav of nevela unless you eat it? No, that's the definition of the lav. Like I would never tell you you don't violate the melacha of the iser chol Shabbos unless you're machal Shabbos. Well, that's obvious. That's what the iser is, and you don't violate the lav of zeil unless you're gozel. That's obvious. I only have to tell you. You don't violate this law unless you do X, Y, and Z. If X, Y, and Z is a side point, is a condition, is an added on condition to the law. What's he saying? So the Rambam seems pretty clear with his lashon that just the Rambam's lashon for 1 second. Yeah, the Rambam's lashon is the ain over blav zed sheyikach achifet shechamad. It's a side tonight. You don't violate the lav unless you take the item that you were chomed. So what does that mean? For the Ravid, the iser is taking the item. It's a type of gzela. Or at the very least, similar to gzela. For the Rambam, the iser is the chimud. The iser is the chimud. The tnai is taking the chayfetz. So that's the sort of machlok. The Rambam thinks the iser is taking the chayfetz. Just gzela is aser is taking something without paying money, and chimud aser is taking something with paying money. It's that similar to. Not like toast that it is gzeila, it's similar to gzeila, it's parallel to gzeila. Just a slightly different example. For the Rambam, the iser is the chimud. There's a tnai that you only violate a law for the chimud if you take the money, but that's a side tnai. Now, there are different ways of saying this. The Rav Lichtenstein said it over, the iser is like, what do you mean by the iser is the chimud? Because I think the Rav said it over in the name of Chaim a little differently. Like, you could say, the way Rav Lichtenstein said it over, the iser was the pressuring the guy
I think there's the Rav once said it over, maybe, that the Isser was like the feeling of Chimud. That doesn't make a difference. Same basically. So, and then Rav Lifton said, like, the taking object was a Tanai. Well, some people say when they named the Rav, the taking object is a Shear in the Chimud, not a Tanai. So there's slightly different ways of saying this word in the Rambam. Right, exactly what is the Isser? Is it the pressuring, which has no Maisa, or is it the feeling, which has no Maisa at all? Exactly why do you take the Chifetz? Is it a Tanai, or is it a Shear, and how strongly do you Rechomi? But it doesn't really make a difference. Either way, the point is very clear. If the Rambam's on one side, you just could say it in slightly different formulations. The Rambam's on the other side. And this explains all three Lishitases, right? The Rambam says, whether the guy says Rotsi or not, you still pressured him. Right? You still pressured him, and you have the Tanai taking the object. Well, the Rambam says, no, the Isser is only to steal the guy's object. If he wants to give it to you, where's what's the Isser? And there's also a saying, the Rambam said, Imbo Maisa, because the Isser is just a pressuring in the Chimud. There's no discrete action there. The Rambam says, the Isser is stealing someone's item. Just, it's different than Zaylik, because you paid him. So, of course, there's a Maisa of stealing. And the last one, the Rambam says, Nitzik Lashome. If the Isser is stealing and he didn't say Rotsani and you have no right to his object, then you have to give it back. So, there's a lot of Nitzik Lashome. The Rambam would never say Nitzik Lashome because the Isser wasn't taking the guy's object. That was a Tanai. You might have taken the guy's object fair and square. The Isser is the pressuring, and that's, you can't repay that. That's just something that happened once. The taking was not the problem. After all, maybe he said Rotsani and you took it fair and square. Or maybe he didn't say Rotsani, but sometimes you took the item fair and square, and there's not per se a Chiv Tashlum. So that's a pretty mochrach lamdus in the Ram of the Ravid. So we have three ways of understanding Losachmo. For Tosos, it is Zela. For the Ravid, it's like Zela, just a slightly different case where you paid money. And for the Rambam, it has nothing to do with Gzela at all, because a Tanai is that you take an object. But that has nothing to do with Gzela, that you could have taken it actually behead because he said Rotsani, and Pluya was up in Zvini Zvini. This is an Isser of the process of Chimud of muttering, the process of Chimud of muttering someone to get them to do something, give something up that they don't want to give up. Interestingly, in Losis Ave, you could also have a Chakira. And there are three ways to understand Losis Ave as well. The Rashi quotes Rashi on Chumash said Losis Ave is the same as Losachmod. So you might say Losis Ave is the same as Losachmod, no difference between them. The Rambam, however, says there is a difference between them based on the Mechilta, which says that Losav is a separate law from Losachmod. Losav leads Losachmod. Sounds like Losav is a prior, is a lesser aver than Losachmod. So one way you could say is like it sounds from Rashi, Losachmod, Losav, Hainoach, same thing. The second way you could say is like the Mechilta, no, Losav is a lesser avera, which might lead to Losachmod. But even within the lesser avera, there are two different formulations. A lesser avera, which is similar to Losachmod at least, or lesser avera, which is a totally different inyan. The Rambam understands a middle formulation. It says Losis Ave is less than Losachmod, but it's in the same direction. Losachmod means I pressure you to give something up that you don't want to give up. Losis Ave means I plan to pressure you to give something up that you don't want to give up. Right? Losachmod means I want your wife, so I make you like miserable until you divorce her and I take her. Losis Ave means I want your wife, so I plan to make your life miserable and get you to divorce his wife and your wife and steal her, but I don't get a chance to actually do it. You could have said, right, so again, number one, Losav might mean Losachmod. Well, number two, it might be like the Rambam. It's less than Losachmod, but it's the same basic idea. I just plan to do Losachmod. It's the pigle of Losachmod. Or you could have said, Pshat in the Hebrew, or let's say, he would have said Pshat in the Mechilta is like Balabatim think. Is that no, Losav just means I desire your item, even if I have no plan at all to do anything bad and take it from you. Losav just means I want your wife, but I'm not going to take her at all. I never have needed to take her. I just desire her. So that would be Losis Ava. That would be the most machmir approach, and the Rambam doesn't take that. He suggested maybe the reason the Rambam doesn't take that is because of the Ibn Ezra's question, which is how can you blame the guy for desiring? You know, that's just how he feels. He's a good person. I would never take your wife, Chas v'Shalom. I just desire her. So how could you blame the guy for that? So Ibn Ezra has an answer, thinks there's certain psychological training. It could be the Rambam thought that, no, you can't blame the guy for just a desire he feels. So therefore, he took a middle shita. It's planning to pressure him. Really, the three possibilities. You could say you do blame the guy for a desire, which is what Ibn Ezra seems to think.
You could say, in the middle, like the Rambam, it's planted to Lo Sachmot, or you could say, like Rashi, it's the same as Lo Sachmot. Okay, then the last thing we discussed is the beginning of the Gemara. The Gemara excluded three things from Chiv Kefel, which are the same, you know, the same three things we're familiar with from all of Rashas, excluded from everything else. Havadim, Shtos, and Karkos. In terms of Karka, Tosos asked the question. How can you, why, if we need to exclude Karka from Kefal, who's a Hav mean your Chayiv Kefal? The Parsha is talking about Torah time is gone. So how can, right, that Pasuk, Al Kol Dvar Pesha, etc., is talking about Torah time is gone. So how could there be even a Hav mean to have a Kefal and a Torah time is gone on Karka? Torah time is gone is only there's a Shvu, and there's no Shvu on Karka. Especially if there's no Shvu anyway, what's the Hav mean for Kefal? Given that this particular pasuk we're darshaning talks about Tolan Tan is gone. So, Tosis has two answers. His second answer, we didn't have, might not be able to attack, but his first answer was, it's a case of Gilgul Shua. It's a case of Gilgul Shua. So, Rav Lichtenstein had two problems with this line in Tosfos. Tosis answers, of course, if you don't swear, there's no Havmi or Kefel. The Havmi is if you swore through Gilgul Shua, you'd be Chayv Kefel. So we need a pasuk to teach you that up Tor Kefel, even when you swore through Gilgul Shua. So, first question is, hold on a second. Toin Tanis Ganav only applies to a Shomer. There's no Shomer on, there's no Shmir on Karka. So, even if there was a Shmua, have to be a Havim Yimachai Kefel. To be Chai Kefel, you need Shmira and Shmua. So, even though you can have Shmua through Gilgul Shmua, if there's no Chalo Shmira on Karka, then how could there be a Havim of Kefel? Why do you need to exclude Karka from Kefel? So, that's a great question, but he said, actually, that's not the question. That's a chakira. Is there a chalos shmira on karka or not? So that's a famous machlokes rishonim. The Mishnah says that a shomer sachar doesn't have to pay if karka is stolen, and a shomer chinam doesn't have to swear. Why doesn't it say shomer chinam doesn't have to pay? Some people say, because shomer chinam paying is pshia, that's not a common thing, we're not dealing with it. But the Rimi Gash, picked up by the Rama, makes a deal. He says, no, shomer chinam doesn't have to swear, shomer sachar doesn't have to pay, but a shomer chinam has to pay. Which proves that Pshia is Chayav even in Karka Avad Mishtaris. That's the Chiddush of the Rimi Gash and the Rambam against Raivin and Tosfos. So the Rimi Gash and the Rambam, this Chiddush they call Posheya Kenmazik. If I'm a Posheya, that's not a Chiyav Shomer. That's a Chiyav Mazik. And a Mazik is Chayav even on Karkas. That's the famous sheet of the Rambam. Hilchoskiris Per Bezal Achagimel, Posheya Kenmazik. That Pshia is considered a type of Hezek, and therefore Chayav even for Karka. Now, there are two ways to disagree with the Rambam. The Raivin Alatar disagrees with him and says, Poshea is not Kamazik. Poshea is just a lack of Shmira. But Haraya, if I Shmira Babaylin, and I'm Poshea, I don't have to pay. Which proves, but Mazik, Babaylin has to pay. So it proves that Poshea is not Kamazik. The Raivin says, no, Poshea is not Kamazik. You just sat there and didn't do something. How can you call that Mazik? Tosvos, in Shmuel's Daf, in Bav Metzia Daf and Zayin with Beis, has a different way of arguing. Tos says, how could you say Pshia is Chayiv? He doesn't know if the Rambam, but argues on that theoretical Shita. How can you say Pshia is Chayiv by Karka? It's excluded from Shmira. I mean, what's Tos? Tos is a deeper objection. The Rambam just says, you think Poshea Kamazik? Poshea is not Kamazik. Tos says, even if Poshea is Kamazik, if I'm Poshea and you're a coffee mug right there, that's not Mazik. Only Poshea of a Shomer is Kamazik. That's obvious. If I'm stomp Poshea on a guy's car in the street, of course I don't have to pay. Only if I'm Poshea when I was expected to be not Poshea, I have to pay. Only a Pshia of a Shomer is Mazik. So it says, but if there's no Chalosh Shmira by Karka, then how can you say Poshea Kamazik by Karka? So the Rambam says, A, Poshea is Kamazik, Poshea of a Shomer is Kamazik, and there's Shmira on Karka. The Rabbi says Poshea is not Kamazik. Tos says there's no Shmira on Karka. So what's Machlokes? The big Chakira here between Tosos and the Rambam. Tos says there's no Chalosh Shmira on Karka, so even if Poshea is Kamazik, not on Karka, because you're not a Shomer. Poshea of a Zar is never Kamazik. The Rambam says no, there's no Chiyuve Shmira on Karka, but there is a Chalosh Shmira. And if there's a Chalosh Shmira, then there can be a Chiyuve Mazik, because Poshea Kamazik. So that's Machlokes. Tosa says there's no Shmira on Karka. The Rambam says there is Shmira on Karka. There's just no Chiyuve Shmira. But the Shmira on Karka could create a Chiyuv Mazik. In which case, our Tosos would work well, even though it's not so the Shitase. But our Tosos would seem to work better, at least in this particular answer, with the Rambam. Because in the Rambam, there's Shmira on the Karka. You don't understand. There could be a Havim of Toin Tanis Ganif.
for Tosa L'shitasa, it doesn't work out so well. So if Tosa says there's not a chalo shmir at all, then how could you have a hav mina to be chayiv kefal for toin tanis ganef? That's the first interesting thing about this Tosa, is that it works fine for the Rambam, but for Tosa it's a little dochuk. The last thing he pointed out was that don't think this is like such a pashut great answer. That Tosa says, oh, you could be chayiv toin tanis ganef through the shvua of Gilgal shvua, because that only works if you make one of two assumptions in a chayivra. Number one, you could ask, when is Toin Tanis Ganef Chayiv? When he takes a Shuas a Shomrim falsely, or any Shua falsely? And it looks and says, you think, only if he takes a Shuas a Shomrim falsely. But Gilgal is not a Shuas a Shomrim. So the Tosfos say one of two things. Either they have to say, Toin Tanis Ganef is Chayiv if he took any Shua falsely, or he has to say, Gilgal Shua is a Shuas a Shomrim. Which he was Moram, he's very much a kitzur, because the famous guy here about Gilgal Shvuah. Again, what's Gilgal Shvuah? I owe you a Shvuah about X. Then I also, you make me swear about Y. Is it that it's just one big Shvuah? As long as I'm saying X, I throw in Y, but it's just a part of that one big original Shvuah? Or that no, one Mechayiv Shvuah can rehabilitate a different Mechayiv Shvuah. Once I'm Mechayiv Shvuah on X, I now have an independent Mechayiv on Y. So is Gilgal Shvuah just making a big Shvuah? Or that one Shvuah creates a new Hischaivus of a second Shvuah? So Tosfos would either have to say, anytime I swear falsely, I'm chayiv toin tanis ganef, even though it's not a Shuas HaShomer. Or you would say, no, this is Shuas HaShomer, because the Gilgal, Shuas X, created an entirely new Shuas Y in the Karka and rehabilitated the Shuas HaShomer for the Karka, which still be a finish, even if it's an independent Shuas to call it a Shuas HaShomer. But, okay, so that gets into these two lumduses. Again, either Tosfos has to assume that toin tanis ganef is chayiv for any Shuas Sheker, even not a Shavuos HaShomrim, or Tosfos assumes that Gilgal cannot just add something into this other irrelevant Shua, but rehabilitate the original Shavuos HaShomrim by Karka, which would be a Chiddush, but one way of understanding Gilgal Shua. Okay.